happy Thursday evening and Friday morning to some people. Welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have a special guest that I am calling her Future Girl because she is in the future. She is an Australian author, Lexi Cooper. She started writing when she was 6 and hasn't stopped since. She's not a deviant, but she does have a deviant's imagination and a desire to entertain readers with her words. Add the two together and you get erotic romances that can make you laugh, cry, shake with fear, or tremble with desire, sometimes all at once. When she's not submerged in the world she creates, Lexi's life revolves around her family, a husband who thinks she's insane, an indoor cat who likes to stalk shadows, and her daughters who both utterly captured her heart and changed her life forever. Lexi's contact information is right here on this page. You can contact her via email, Twitter, and website, and all of her other social media links can be found there as well. Welcome all the way from Australia, Lexi Cooper.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. Now, did I say your last name right? I forgot to even ask you. Is it Cooper?
Yes, it's Cooper.
Okay.
Yes.
Even though it's spelled a little bit.
I know it's spelled a little bit different to the way I think it's spelled over there. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But that's okay. That's okay. I was trying to be, I don't know. Anyway, let's just go on. So welcome and good morning to you as we over here are winding down for the evening. You're in the middle of your day.
Yeah. It's 11:30 on Friday. So, yep, in the future.
Future girl.
Future girl. I wish I could tell you the lotto numbers. That would help. We could have some kind of system.
Well, I was thinking, I'm moving tomorrow. Can you tell me how that's going to go since you're already in tomorrow? But anyway.
It's going to go really well.
Oh, good. Thanks. I'm glad you're telling me that. I feel better already. we were talking just a little bit before the show, and it's for everybody that's listening. Lexi is in Australia, and they're in the middle of a hot, hot, horribly hot summer over there. So those of you who are up in the north and you're all snowed in, I was looking at the weather and the news earlier, and some of you were like, oh, I'm all snowed in, you know, snowmageddon again. And she is dealing with, and she did the calculations because, you know, Americans can't do those calculations. We're stuck on Fahrenheit. She did the calculations. She said it's expected to be around 116. And if you think you're cold right now, just imagine that, and then maybe you won't be so sad. So there we are.
I wish I could send some of the heat away. I really do.
I'm sure. My daughter and I, it's funny because you're talking about Australia. My daughter and I, she said she'd like to go there someday. And I was like, that's really cool and all. But they have some of the ickiest, biggest spiders you've ever seen in your life. And I don't think I want to ever go anywhere that has that.
where I live, so back onto the bush, like a big reserve that's just full of gum trees and bush. And because I live on the east coast, we get a lot of funnel webs. I don't know if you know funnel web spider is. I think it's the most deadly spider in the world.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah. I just get and I collect them because they just wander into our backyard, into our garage, and I've become an expert at basically picking them up with a jar, and we keep them for a day, and then we take them to the hospital so they milk them to make anti-venom. But we have spiders, snakes. We had a redback spider actually catch and kill a lizard at our front door the other day. So
no, thank you. No, thank you.
But I didn't.
We have tarantulas, but they're not poisonous, so.
But they look creepy. I must admit, they look creepy. But
spiders don't worry me. Bitty ones.
I can deal with spiders, but I don't like cockroaches. You know, and I know they do nothing except, you know, well, they're gross. But yeah, I'll freak out at a cockroach, and then it's a spider. Oh, look, it's a spider. I'll just pick that up. But you know, like, yeah. I think it's
That's
a weird
hilarious.
Australian thing.
I must be. You've raised around them and it doesn't bother you. I don't know, but no. Okay, well, you just confirmed that that is a place that I probably don't need to ever go. Cause...
No, but in my country's defense, you don't get attacked like when you walk out the door. I promise.
Well, I was terrorized once by it was morning, I was half asleep, I went to do my thing on the toilet, sitting there, and there was this huge spider, of course, huge to me isn't huge, on the wall, and I had nothing close to me to hit it, and I wasn't going to, like, move too fast and have it get me or something, so I'm screaming to my daughter, come help me, and I think she was 12, maybe 11, she comes in there, Mom, she squishes it where the first thumb, and then she's like, really? So yeah, that's me and spiders. Not gonna happen.
My grandfather, because I grew up in the country, so you know, much further inland, and my grandparents had an outside toilet, you know, and it was a thing. You'd go to the toilet, particularly at night, you'd take a torch and you'd sit on the loo and you'd count how many redback spiders was in the toilet at the time.
Oh my God.
You know, it's like, oh, look, there's a big one. Wow. And then you'd finish what you do and you'd go back inside and confer about how many spiders were there. So, yeah, I guess it is part of the life here, but it's all right. They won't attack you.
I'm going to have nightmares.
I didn't mean that. No. What I was trying to say is it's actually really quite safe to be here. So come visit.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Okay. I'll have to bring extra shoes and hold them in my hands so I can smack them. Clap them together, make sure the spiders don't go away. Okay, and that's about me and my spider phobia. Yes, I'm arachnophobic, for sure. So you started writing early, very early. And what kinds of things were you writing about when you were young, when you were, let's say, elementary?
My dad still has the very first book I ever wrote, which was 2 pages, you know, and it was when I was 6.
Uh-huh.
And it took me a week to write. And it was about a girl and her pet dragon. And the dragon's
awesome.
Name was Sandy. And Sandy was kidnapped bad guys. That was what I called them when I was 6. And the girl went and got her dragon back. And in retaliation, the dragon incinerated. And I remember
awesome.
Looking up in the dictionary that word. I can remember. And my mum saying to me, do you really want to use that word? And I was... And so the dragon incinerated the bad guys, and that was really good. And this story ends with the girl and the dragon laughing, but the dragon then, because Sandy, the dragon, laughed, set fire to some more bush, and so it ended with the dragon going, oops. So that was my very first one.
Well, it was a happy for now then.
It was a happy for now, yes. And then I always wanted to be, well, not always. I always wanted to write. That was just it. That was mm-hmm. what I did. I finished school, dinner, homework, whatever, and I would write. And they would be stories. And they were always very weird stories. My parents actually got called into school when I was in year 2. I don't know what you would call it. So kindergarten, year 1, year 2. So
oh.
no, only
oh, okay.
Only
yeah.
7?
Yeah.
6, 7?
Second grade. Okay,
and,
when you were about 7?
Yes, yeah. And I wrote a story, and it was about a woman who fell into this dream. And in the dream, she was being chased by faceless men. And she ran through a swamp, and she woke up from the dream, like woke herself up, and went and had a glass of wine. Now, I was, like, very young, and my parents are complete teetotalers. So why I thought that was important that she had a glass of wine in this story, I don't know. But she had the glass of wine and was, okay, I'm glad that was just a dream, and then went back to bed and went back into that dream. And this story that I had was writing for my... class for schoolwork, she died. She got attacked by these faceless men in the swamp and eaten by crocodiles. And Mum and Dad got called in, and they're like, "The school said we really need to talk to you about what's going on with your daughter." But I was a happy kid. I was a happy family, so I don't know. But I was writing all the time, and very strange things, and I wanted to be the new Stephen King when I was in year 6.
Uh-huh.
Like so. that I read Pet Sematary. That was my first Stephen King book. And that was it. I was going to be the next Stephen King. But then when I was 15, my sister-in-law gave me my very first Harlequin. It was a silhouette desire.
That's a gateway and, drug right there.
Oh my giddy aunt, I tell you, and I remember reading this book and hoping my mum would never watch, because my mum has never said the word sex in her entire life. She only ever calls it naughties. So you can imagine, and I'm reading this book, it was like, and then suddenly it was all like, okay, I'm going to be Stephen King, but there's going to be more sex in it. So I failed year 10 maths because I spent all of maths in maths class at school actually writing a story under my desk and asking my friend beside me, what's the answer, whenever I got asked. And that was fail maths, but
hey, whatever, you never use it again.
Right. Although I won't tell my children, I know you must do well with maths, but
yeah. I have a 15-year-old, and she's like, "Well, okay, I ever use this again?" I'm like, "I don't want to lie to you, never." but you have to do it.
You have to do it. So. When I was my last 2 years of high school, and I was in basically the bottom maths class. We used to call it veggie maths, and so but it was officially called maths in society. So, you know, yes, if you're not a mathematician, this will at least help you work out how much you have to pay at McDonald's, you know, that kind of thing.
Right,
and
exactly.
and one of the subjects in maths in society was space maths, where you would work out the orbits of the, and to this day I'm still waiting for the opportunity where I can work out how long it takes Venus to, because I'm sure it must be coming at some point. That my school told me that I will need this. But,
right? Yeah, sure. Yeah, I hate lying to her because I'm just like, no, you'll never use it. And in Texas here, you know, they force you to take things you'd never use. Like algebra 2. I mean, she's not even going to take college algebra when she goes to algebra and chemistry. She's going to be a singer, for God's sake. She doesn't need chemistry. You know, she doesn't care. She never will. You know, so anyway, I agree. I would have been the same way. I would have been writing under my desk. So
yeah,
kudos
yeah.
for you for failing math.
Do you know, I still have that story. It filled up an entire, like, it was the whole year I worked on this. It filled up an entire, like, 96-page book. It was written in pencil, and it's actually my mum and dad's place. And I read it the last time I visited them, and I was like, oh, my God, what was wrong with me? Like,
that was awful. Yeah.
It's very dark and disturbing and far too sexual for a 16-year-old girl to be writing. But, hey, that's
right. Well, whatever works. So you decided early that this is something you wanted to do. When did you decide that you were going to make it into a job for you, you know, a career type thing?
I just wrote. I wrote all the time, and my father, in his infinite wisdom, told me when I finished high school that there was no money in writing. When I told him that's what I wanted to do, there's no money in writing, mm-hmm. so go be an artist. Because there's money in art, apparently. So
really,
yeah.
Sorry.
Who knew? And I actually did. Because you know, like, good girl, I love my parents, and so I went to art school. But even while I was there, I was writing. So every artwork that I did, I wrote a story before I created the artwork. So every artwork was based on the story, and I had all these stories And I was still writing. And then I actually became a high school English teacher and I was still writing. And my husband said to me one day, who he was only the boyfriend at the time, you know, why don't you do something with this? And it was that, you know, that scene in Back to the Future where Marty McFly's dad says, you know, I can't do that. I can't handle that kind of rejection. You know, that scene.
Oh, yeah.
And that was me. I'm like, no. Because at least if I'm the only one reading these things that I'm writing, I think they're good. But someone else will read it and, you know, Tommy, it's crap, and then my world comes to an end. But God love him, he persisted, and I ended up joining a romance writers group here in Newcastle, and that was just kaboom, like it was a big step, and the world opened for me. And while I was in that group, one of the other members signed a contract with a small, very small indie publishing house. And I remember coming home and thinking, I can do this. Like, why can't I do this? I can do this. So I wrote a novella because they were only wanting novellas at the time. So I came home and I wrote this, and it was an erotic publishing house. And I'd never written anything erotic before as such,
right,
ignoring my 10-year-old dark, disturbing thing. So I wrote this novella and I sent it to them. And 24 hours later, I had a contract offer. And I wasn't prepared for that. So I was teaching at the time, and teachers in New South Wales are not allowed to have other jobs. That's one of, you know, that's a real no-no. So I had to come up with this different person. And it was really strange. And I honestly didn't expect any success from it. But it did. They offered me more contracts, and then I started to get readers that sent me emails saying, when's your next one? And it kind of snowballed. And then when I was on maternity leave with my second child, my youngest, who I affectionately call the Demon Princess, when I was on maternity leave with her, and my husband and I were looking at the numbers, and it was at a point where I didn't have to go back to teaching, and it was like, well, you know what, this is it. This is what I have wanted to be my whole life, and I can do this. If it's scary, you know your income when you're a teacher, you know your hours, but he's always been one to, you don't play safe, if you follow what you're passionate about. And he said, go on, you can do it. So I told the school I wasn't coming back, which is unheard of, and that's it. That was it. So and that was 8 years ago, 9 years ago, almost 9 years ago.
Wow. Well, kudos to you for taking the leap of faith, so to speak, because a lot of people still hang on to the job for a long time, and before they're ready to wrestle free of, you said, the fixed income, know it's coming, income guaranteed.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And I loved teaching. I loved teaching. So it wasn't like I was trying to escape a hideous job, or one that I wasn't happy with. I really did enjoy teaching. It's a very different world now. I don't know if I'd survive in a classroom now. Or I don't know if the kids would survive in my classroom. Maybe it's probably a better way to put it. I loved writing more, and I, there's so many stories in my head that if I had more time, I want more time, because there's just that need to come out. So it's a big thing. But as my husband has always been my biggest supporter, and he never really walks the safe line. He's of the opinion that you don't get anywhere if you do. So
right. No, I agree with him. But it is a hard step to take. But like you said, when you start getting fans and they want more, and how can you not respond to that?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing rush. it's a weird ego rush, I must admit, and I still find it hard to line up my two existences, for want of a better word. You have the mum that has to empty the cat litter tray, and then you have the email that goes, oh, when you write the next book, and it's so strange. But it's surreal and wonderful. And you know what, even though my dad told me to follow art, he did say to me the other day that he's very proud of me. So that's like,
that's really awesome. That's really great. And, it's so important to have a good support system one way or the other. And it sounds like you've got a great one between your family, your dad, and your husband. If husbands aren't behind you, then that's really hard. So.
Yeah, yeah. So he's a good guy.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I hope so. Because you married him, right? You're right, romance. You've got to have a good guy. Yeah. So,
you know, all his mates look at him and he's like, "I'm the luckiest man in the world. I'm her hero, her inspiration every time." And then when I do write the erotic stuff, I'm sure he tells everyone, "Yeah, we researched that. We know that." Like,
yeah. That was about a couple weekends ago. Yeah, sure. I'm sure. That sounds like a male thing to do.
Yeah. Hi, honey.
Nice to know they're not. Nice to know they're the same there. so, you were writing the novellas. How hard was it for you to switch over? I mean, you'd written before, you know,
yep.
the long writing, but was it hard for you to write a full-length novel on a deadline after submitting novellas?
I don't know. I need my writing friends that would probably be able to answer this question honestly. They'd know if I was freaking out or not. I don't think so. I think I do know I write better when I'm stressed and under pressure. So I think the deadlines. What was the first? I can't even tell you what the first novel was. Yes, I can. It was a book called Dark Destiny, and it was a paranormal romance, paranormal, you know, erotic romance, very, very strange storyline. Basically, the heroine was the Grim Reaper. She rocked around in a pair of jeans, you know, T-shirt, AC/DC T-shirt. And and it was set in Australia because, you know, Australia on the beach, Bondi Beach. And it was quite unusual story. I don't know where my stories came from. But the third horseman of the apocalypse, Pestilence, had got tired of waiting for the apocalypse, so decided that he would start it. And she was like, no, that's not how we do things. So, and I just wrote. So whether it's a novella or a novel, I think I just write. And I know I set myself a word limit. I have a minimum of 2,000 words a day that I want to write. And as the ticking clock tells me, I'm getting closer and closer to the deadline and the words haven't reached the end yet. I think I just kind of work more feverish and comes out. So, you know, it was probably harder because at the same time I was also still a mum and I had young children back then, you know, and still working because I was still being a teacher for the first, you know, few years of being a writer as well. So I don't think I slept. I just don't think I slept much. But almost every book that I write, I never know really how long it's going to be. I think, oh, this is going to be a novella, and quite often it turns into 50, 60,000 words. And I'll sit down and think, you know, the one that I'm working on now, in my mind, when I started it, it was going to be about 30, 35,000 words, but it's not. I know the story is actually, it's a tight little, you know, 15,000 word story. So I never really know. That can make it tricky if, you know, you have 2 weeks to write a book and suddenly it wants to be 60,000 words. That can, you know, make life fun, but I kind of roll with it.
That can be a little confusing. Well, and I know that, you know, in the book industry, when you sell something too, they kind of, you know, you say, okay, this one's good. We need them to be 50, 60 or, you know, around 70 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like just wanting to get words on the page instead of actually trying to get something good on the page.
I do the panic, particularly if it is, you know, a contracted on proposal one and yes, it has a specific word count. And let's say it's 60,000 and it usually always hits me around the 2,000, 3,000 word mark where I go, there's no way I'm going to be able to write 60,000 words of this story. I can write the end now, you know. And then I get through it after a lot of coffee and a lot of stress.
Well, it's nice to know that you get through it because I sit here and go, you know, I get 5,000 words on it. I'm like, well, the story's almost done. So what the hell? I got to go back. So, yeah, I think I missed a whole story that goes inside the story here or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally understand.
Yeah, been there many times. And that's when you have your awesome critique partners that go, well, wait a minute, didn't you say this was going to happen? And you're like, that's right. And, you know, then suddenly there's 30,000 words that you didn't know existed.
Right, exactly. That could take like, oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah, I agree. And that's what they, it is good to have a partner or a group that you, I don't know, help keep you on track, hold you accountable, yep. and, you know, tell you where you can strengthen and cut out. And it is really good to have. What do you think you would tell a new writer who maybe they wrote, like, maybe they're like you, they wrote and then they think, I could actually publish maybe something. What would you tell them to go do? What would you say first step?
I think the first step is definitely surround yourself or find some people who you trust to tell you the truth about what you've written. So, and that can be tricky. You can give, you know, say, oh, well, I trust my best friend, but your best friend loves you and doesn't want to see you hurt. So they're going to say, this is the best thing I've ever read, you know, or they might be an awesome, brutally honest best friend and say, this sucks. But they definitely have people that you believe their opinion, that you know that they're going to tell you what's good and what's bad about what you've written. Listen to that feedback. Decide if you agree with it or not. Then find yourself a good editor. I can't stress enough, if you are wanting to put a book out there, whether it be self-publishing or sending it to a publisher, get it edited before you do with a good editor. And there are a lot of good editors out there. But, yeah, definitely read, write, lots of reading of the genre that you're wanting to write in or that you are writing in is always handy. Good support network, good critique feedback, and a good editor. Really, really important. And I know nowadays I should probably also add in then the whole, you know, social media and understanding things like metadata and keywords and tags and whatnot, which is really important. But I suck at all of those, so I can't give any advice on them.
You're not the only one. I think they ought to have a special school just for that stuff because the SEO stuff, I don't get it. I'm like, what? I don't get it. Whatever you say. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. But all that stuff's important because you, even if you go through traditional publishing, you end up having to do a lot of marketing yourself.
Yeah.
Because you want your book to get out to the world, and, you know, best case scenario is everybody in the world knows about it. But that's not always the case. And some traditional publishers put a lot into it, but some don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very different from when I first started really writing with the intent to make it a living. You know, that was pre ebook days, pre Facebook, pre social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so such a different world where now it is. You know, you really do have to engage on a much deeper level and a more immediate level too. And I know a lot of authors do find that tricky, and I'm as stupid and as ridiculous as I sound right now, and blah 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 blah, blah. I would much rather sit in a little room all by myself and not talk to anyone, and like, go away.
Right.
But that's not the world now. That's wonderful as well, that we are, everything is changing. And it isn't just that strict, okay, there's a faceless person in a building on the other side of the world reading the book that I've written and I don't know anything, and they will say yes or no. And if they say yes, that's really exciting, but then you never find out from readers either. Whereas now it's very different. It's so wonderful. You get these immediate reactions to your books. And one of the things that I find both scary and amazing is, you know, within an hour of a new book releasing, you can find out how people are responding to it. And hopefully it's good. You know, like, you don't want the first review on Amazon to be one star. But sometimes, you know, hey, but even then, you at least you know that you've moved that person in some way. Silver lining.
Yeah. Yes. And I would say a good thing also with this, you know, everybody in this, like you said, it's got an immediacy now to it. It's like people read them and they respond right away. That The good thing is you get feedback pretty quick once the book is actually published, rather than waiting, you know, the 2 weeks and waiting for a review in a magazine or whatever, you know, type of thing. But I think it's a cool thing. I mean, for readers, it's a whole new world getting to know who the creator of this wonderful story is on social media. You may never talk to him in person, but you know, you're getting a sense of who they are and, ooh, they like this and, ooh, they posted about this. And it's so exciting. I mean, I know it is for me because I fangirl all over people. but, you know, it's just there's some authors that I just love. I'm so into their writing that getting to know them even via social media is like, oh, my God, every time they post. Still, 8 years later, you know. So, yeah, it's really cool. I think it's just a neat world we have, but and things like this digital radio show that I can hook up with you without a phone call, online, and we're recording this great show. That's just another extension of you to offer to readers and potential readers. So, getting a chance to get to know you.
This is where, you know, like I get a chance to go, hey, I'm awesome. Read me, buy me. And then they're going like, what? It's this woman.
Yeah, whatever, lady. Yeah. But no, I have some great listeners and they are really, really avid readers. And I tell you what, they have enjoyed my Entangled Authors a lot. And I've had quite a few of the Entangled Authors on in the last year. And you guys are just blowing me away at your writing because they pick up some really good authors.
It's an amazing publishing house. Yeah, it really is. I've been with a few, and The Stubborn Billionaire is my very first release with them, and I'm just amazed. I'm blown away by the whole experience from the first contract signing right through to even now. You know, I mean, it's been out for, I'm going to say, 3 weeks, and it's still just—it's not, you know, okay, it's out now. We don't want anything to do with you. It's still this amazing family environment. I'm really honored and to now be a part of the Entangled family. So definitely.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful, and I think that they are very supportive, and I wish that it was a page in the playbook that all the publishers would, I mean, small press or not, you know, if you don't love your authors, if you don't do for them you're not doing for yourself. And you know, I'm thinking, cause I still believe this strongly, Entangled is all women and that's, you know, that's how we roll. So you go. So I'm happy, but I'm very happy to have so many of you on the show cause it's great. So let's see. We're about halfway through, and I'm going to put – well, we're a little more than halfway. I'm going to put the number out if anybody wants to call in, 347-633-9609. You may call in to talk to Lexi. Keep it clean, y'all. Keep it clean.
What did I say? I've got Chris Hemsworth hiding in the cupboard. I can, like, bring him out.
Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't that be so nice?
Because if you could video, it'd be great. But let's see. I walk in. My husband will walk in from work and hear him sitting on the couch watching you torture poor Chris. So he'd be like, what? Anyway. So tell me a little bit about what your favorite heroes are in romance.
Oh, okay. Even though I like to subvert the alpha male concept, you know, there is something. Colin Firth and Mark Darcy, you know, the whole alpha male. I love that idea that a hero is brought completely undone and then essentially remade by the heroine and his.
Oh, yeah.
Usually unexpected love for her. I love that. But my heroes do tend to be, and it may be, they're always Australian most of the time. 99% of the time they're Australian.
That
which
is
means
great.
That they also tend to be our, you know.
sexy.
I keep being told the accent is sexy. I really think I should get my husband to maybe, like, read my books, and then I'll just put them out there.
Yes, do it.
I'm sure the rest of the world thinks he's sexy. But yeah, they, because they are Australians, I think they tend to be far more self-deprecating, more probably sarcastic. So my heroes,
yeah,
I like them to be. I mean, I've been a Harrison Ford fan forever. My room was wallpapered with Han Solo and Indiana Jones. So it's that kind of sense of, you know, a little bit unpredictable, a little bit roguish, a little bit full of himself at the same time, but, you know, and also vulnerable with to the heroine in a way. So, I try not to have cookie cutter heroes. I really like to take a concept and then just somehow, you know, to keep everyone on their toes. The hero, the heroine, the readers, me, and my editors, you know, they need to be kept on their toes as well. But yeah, definitely strong man in both character, morals, and strength, and body, of course. You know, we need the body, but yeah, also doesn't take himself too seriously. Quite enjoys, you know, poking fun of himself.
I like the sarcastic characters too, that have the sarcastic, witty.
Yeah, definitely.
Almost dry, deadpan, you know, type of humor sometimes. And it does. That shows that they're vulnerable and they've got this little defense mechanism going on. Indiana Jones was one of the best characters ever written, as far as I'm concerned, because the comebacks were so amazing.
And
Deadpool was pretty damn funny too. I agree with that. I like those kind of alpha males. I don't like the ones who, you know, they stay too in charge. They've got to learn they either have to learn to let go some because of the woman or because of something else in their own personal history, you know, or it just doesn't do it for me. I've read a few where it's kind of like, yeah, I need your weakness. Come on, I need a weakness. You can't be Fabio.
Cut Fabio's hair off. There's his weakness.
Maybe. Huh. There's a thought. But yes, I agree. What about as far as heroines go? What do you think that she needs to have?
Do you know what? She needs a spine. She needs her own mind, and she is feisty. I have great issues with heroines that only function because the hero is in her life. That drives me mental. A heroine, she has to know who she is and doesn't need the hero to complete her. That whole concept of needing, you know, and unconditional love is amazing, but she still has to be her own person and have her own mind. And she will kick butt if she needs to, whether it be physically kick someone's, you know, ass.
Right.
And she can, then that's cool. But she also needs to be able to stand up to anyone, you know, and if she can't, then I don't want to read about her. I don't want to write her, I grew up, I had two older brothers, and so, you know, when you're a girl with two older brothers, you tend to grow up in a very, you know, particular way. It's, well, at least in my family, you know, you didn't do pain. You stand up, you know, wait a minute, I got back off. And I started Taekwondo at a very young age. So I was, you know, like that whole concept of being weak, that doesn't happen. And now that I have daughters, even though they have no older brothers, I really want them to grow up to know that, you know, they are strong, they are intelligent, they are capable, and so their reading material and their movies, everything that they're exposed to, that they should get that back as well. So I don't want them to grow up thinking that they are waiting for someone to rescue them, because my heroines don't need to be rescued by the hero. Right. They will rescue themselves. Thank you very much.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's funny because I read a book recently, and the author, it was the author's first trip into contemporary romance. And she'd been writing all of this great, wonderful paranormal romance, and I loved it. Dragons, wonderful stuff. But the heroine just didn't do it for me. I loved the hero, and I thought he was perfect and flawed and great. But the heroine was just, she sounded like she was a badass when she talked to herself, but she never, like, showed that she was a badass. And even as the story progressed, it just, it's like she became more and more dependent on him instead of finding her foothold. Mm. So I was kind of like, if they're in love and back together, great. But I was just like, Then it wasn't my, like, yes moment. So, like when they, I just watched, I'm watching the second season of Outlander. Are you an Outlander fan?
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Well, I just have a little drool moment.
I just got to the part. Well, yeah, right? Right. I just, and my husband's a huge fan. He loves it. We were watching the part where, now I can't remember his name.
Jamie? And I can't remember her name. I can't remember her name. What is it?
No, not Claire. His best mate guy.
I can see him. I can see him so well.
Yeah, anyway.
Where's my husband? Where he, tell me his name.
Where he gets his vengeance for what happened in France on Sandringham. And what happened to Claire and Mary in France. And he gets his vengeance and lays the head at their feet. And I'm like, yeah! So excited about beheading. And then I was like, that was really gross afterwards, but I was over here yesing until I figured out that was really violent and gross, but that was awesome. So anyway, that's a good hero for you, and he's a side character, but it was great.
I love side characters. I think side characters are really important. They, if you don't have a good side character, then the book's uneven.
Right.
Side characters should take on a life of their own as well, and then if they're really good side characters, they'll run amok, and before you know it, they've got their own book.
Have their own story.
Demanding more,
Well, and they should help move the story along for whatever purpose they need. So, and I've read, I'm like you, I'm sure you've read plenty of stories where you're like, dang, I want to know what's up with that guy.
Yeah.
Please write a book about that guy, or that girl. I've got to know. So for sure, side characters are very important. And character development, period. Because if you just leave that character floundering, like I was saying about this one, it had an opportunity to be awesome. So I was like, go with it, and then it wasn't. So
Treading into unknown territory for the author, I suspect.
Maybe,
scary.
Maybe it was interesting. It was good. It was just, it wasn't as wow as I had hoped it to be. So, when you're a bad billionaire, tell us a little bit about him. Tell us about how naughty he really is, because my kids are not here right now and my husband will be home soon. So tell me about him.
Okay, so I figured at this point in time we all need to maybe realize that there's some awesome, sexy billionaires out there. So, and James Dyson he's an Australian billionaire. So, for all the non-Aussies, he's got the sexy Aussie accent.
Hell yeah.
If you can imagine a really, 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 really sexy Rupert Murdoch, and I know that's a very hard thing to try and imagine, but if you could imagine that, that's what I was wanting to do. He runs the media empire in Australia. He's from the Dyson line. The Dyson family have ruled the Australian media and moving into international media for generations. And he is now, his father's off doing, global things, and he is running the Australian media. That sounds like he's nefarious and horrible, doesn't it? He's not. He has, this newspaper and that TV station. And he's been raised that it's the Dyson way and no way. You know, like, oh, no way. That's it. Dysons get what they want. This is the day, and you do it. And it doesn't matter. The ends does justify the means. And the way he has been raised is that the way of getting what you want is ruthless. And that's it. And his younger brother decided to buck that whole concept and the whole Dyson life and become an artist and met a girl at art school, and things didn't go the way that the younger brother thought, but as a consequence, James blames the heroine for what happened. And so because he is a Dyson, and because he has been raised that you don't mess with a Dyson, you don't, you know, it's the Dyson way or no way, he then decides that he will destroy her. And he sets out a long plan to do so, and then it all unravels because he realizes that, you know, over the course of the book, that, well, maybe I was wrong. You know, gasp! How dare an alpha male realize it, admit that he was wrong? You know.
Right, you know, so or anyway,
tall, gorgeous. You know, I mean, think Hugh Jackman and Chris Hemsworth, and, you know, mix them all together in this killer suit, and here's my little fiery, feisty artist who, you know, her chin barely comes up to top of her head barely comes up to his chin, and she says no, you know, and like no one says no to a Dyson, and she's like, you know, hey, guess what, buddy, on your bike.
There you go.
he was fun to write, and interestingly enough, I had never written a business alpha male billionaire. Like, I mean, I have rock stars in my backlist, and I have vampires, and I have Irish werewolves. I mean, like, I have this whole collection of heroes, but I'd never written a billionaire. And I wanted that whole idea of, you know, like, I mean, this is a man that can buy anything that he wants, whatever he wants, the outcome he wants.
Right.
But he can't buy this outcome. And how does that then make him question everything that he has known and believes in, and was told this is the way it is? How does that completely shift, you know, his world? And it was, it was interesting to write. And it was also fun to imagine what it would be like just to go, oh, you know, I want to fly to Paris. Oh, let's fly to Paris, you know. How amazing would that be?
Wouldn't it be? Well, it's good to write about it. You can at least live vicariously through that. So. So do you have a lot planned for 2017, the rest of 2017?
I do. I've got the edits on the book that follows up the Stubborn Billionaire. The Stubborn Billionaire is the first book in the Muse series, and the second book is the book of a side character that you meet in the Stubborn Billionaire, and he's an American author. He's one of my few non-Australian heroes that I've written. So. I've got the edits of coming pretty certain any day now, and getting prepared for that. It releases in June. Then the third book in the Muse series, I need to start writing ASAP. I've got quite a few. So I really like the pressure because I've got quite a few novellas that I also have to write in amongst all that. Writing, lots of writing. And in amongst all that, I have two personal projects, writing projects that I really want to do. I have been promising my daughters for quite a long time. They are almost 13 and turning 10 this year. So one's turning 13 this year and one's turning 10. And they have been asking me why they can't read my books. And I have been promising them that I will write them a book that they can read. And I have this whole outline in my head, and I've written notes for it. I actually know this whole world, and I want to write the first book of that, and I also have an urban fantasy series that I've started writing the first book of that. So I have all these unfinished works all over the place, and then these ones that I want to write, and then
you have
these,
a bunch
these
of open
contracts
tabs.
Yes, right. So lots of writing. That's always an answer. there's too many stories in my head, but that's definitely so the finishing the Muse series, or at least the next two, and and then all these little, you know, fun novellas that range from very, very naughty to sweet. I'm actually going to try and write some sweet Lexi Cooper books, which is different for me. That's 2017.
Okay. Do you do conferences and author events there in Australia?
I do, and I used to come to the States quite every year for the Romantic Times Convention. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, no violin on my shoulder, but we've had just a whole string of events, personal events, family events, that have kind of grounded me for the last couple of years, which I'm really hoping 2018 can kickstart, you know, that I can get back out there, because I love them. I love going to the conferences, both here in Australia. We've got two in Australia that are very popular. There's the Australian Romance Readers Convention that happens every year, second year, and the Romance Writers of Australia Conference that happens every year. And I haven't been able to get to. I'm missing both this year, which is a shame. And the Romantic Times Conventions in the States, they are amazing. One of the most unbelievable experiences of my life. Every time I've been, I did, I think, four in a row, and then I've missed the last two, and I'm not getting to this year's. I'm not getting to this year's as well, which is a real shame. But I love going to those, because it really gives you a chance to meet the readers, to just and your other authors, but you know, just to interact on a different level. And I don't know if you've worked it out by now, but I'm a bit crazy. So, you know, actually meeting people in person and being just as crazy. I'm sure they walk away from me and go, oh, my
cool
God.
As hell to hang out with. You and I would have a blast. So let's just, that would be awesome.
We need to pencil something in.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you come to RT next year and I'll be there. That'll be hilarious.
Atlanta, is that right? Or Reno? Wait a minute. I've heard where it is next
That's
year.
That's this year. This year is
Atlanta. This year. So Reno next year. I've never been to Reno.
I've never been to Reno.
Let's go to Reno.
How much trouble can you get in Reno? It's Nevada, for God's sake. Surely you can get away with a lot more there. So. Anyway. Well, I've had a blast. I hope you've had a good time.
I've had a great time.
I'd like to make sure that everybody can find where you are online and be able to access all your books. Can you tell us real quick where your website is and how they can get a hold of you?
Yep, my website is www.lexicooper.com. Now, in my infinite wisdom, I thought I'd be very clever with the spelling of my name, because I had to, you know, coming with the name when I was still a teacher. So it's LEXXIE, you know, and then COUPER.
So I like it. I always like XXX.
You
could come up with a, you know.
That double X, I just get nabbed by spam filters all the time. And, you know, again, it shows how old I am. I didn't even think about emails and things like that when I came up with Lexi. So. But so LexiCooper.com is my website. It has a blog on there, and it's a very neglected blog. But I get on there occasionally and you know, be stupid. I'm on Twitter. I love Twitter, and that's Lexi_Cooper. So, and again, because I was saying, oh, you, what you mean? I could write them together? No, that's unheard of. So I had to put a space. Facebook, clearly Facebook. Now Facebook's a tricky one. I have my Lexi Cooper author page, which is Lexi Cooper, but Facebook would not let me use the double X on my profile page. It just won't.
Oh,
it,
my gosh.
It refuses. So on Facebook, I am literally just Lex, L-E-X, Cooper. So Lex Cooper on Facebook. Have I forgotten? I'm sure this. I'm so bad at social media.
You're on Instagram too. I got you on Instagram.
Do you know what my Instagram account though? It's mainly full of photos of like horrible Australian things, like spiders and you know.
Okay, I'm going to look.
Yeah, look at this spider eating this lizard. That was one of my Instagram posts. So I'm the Australian tourism industry is going to hunt me down and shoot me one day because I'm sure I do a bad job of selling this country. It really is a nice country. Come visit us. I
promise. That's okay. A lot of people like spiders. It's just, yeah. I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, we are getting close to our downtime, but I really am so glad that we were able to get you on during your day, Future Girl, and you've been hilarious, and I've had a blast. So I hope you've had a good time.
I've had a great time. I'm going to put Chris Hemsworth back in the closet now, though. So clearly, no one wanted to talk to him. So I'm just going to tuck him away.
All right. It's okay. Well, be nice to him for me.
I will.
Whatever that means. Let your mind wander. And best wishes in 2017. And if you get to the States in 2018, you make sure you let us know at Authors on the Air because we do go to most of the conventions. So I'm going to try to be better about going.
Thank you. I had a wonderful time. Right. Thank you.
Well, have a great day. Evening. You have a great day. Rest of your day. Afternoon.
Afternoon.
And definitely stay in touch with us.
I will. Thank you. Thank you so much. I've had a
All
wonderful
right.
time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And guys, bye-bye. And I will be back next Thursday at my usual time at 9 p.m. 9 p.m. Eastern. And you can find blah, blah, blah. I'm tripping over words. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And you can find Authors on the Air Global Radio Network at www.authorsontheair.com and we're just about anywhere in the social media universe. See you guys next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, almost at Central Eastern. And until then, you guys have sweet dreams and see you later, Australia.
Bye.
Bye.